Welcome to the SPS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from my home office, bringing you some news from Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, or you can go to my website, beardedtechedguy.com. It's my own personal site. Or hopefully coming back soon in the next week or two is the SPS blog on MySPS. So you can check me out in all those places where a lot of this information is shared, along with a whole bunch of other stuff. I hope you guys really enjoyed the last podcast where we talked about the distance learning playbook. I'm excited for you guys to hear my thoughts on chapter two when that time comes. But this week, we are back to school. We have had a great break. We're starting January off fresh-footed here with a great interview from Liam Bevan of Sumner Ave Elementary School. Now, Liam is a science teacher. He's done a lot in the classroom in the last few years. He brings in a whole bunch of prior knowledge with his job, which you also get to hear about too. So there's a lot of really great things in this interview. I really hope you enjoy it. So take a listen.
My name is Liam Bevan. I'm a science teacher over at Sumner Avenue School. This is my third year teaching. I came to teaching a little bit late in my career. Before I began teaching, I worked as a geologist and wetland scientist for an engineering firm. Decided I wanted something different, changed jobs, and here I am.
That's awesome. So with your job prior, clearly that's based in science. And so did you go and get your master's in education with the focus on science or something along that line?
Yeah, I went to school and I got my master's degree in hydrogeology and then continued to work in the field, wetland science. When I decided that maybe it was something different, I wanted something different, I went and sat for all of the testing and to get my licensure. And then I pursued a practicum while I was teaching afterwards to check all the boxes. So it's a little bit different way to get to the teaching degree, but that's the direction I went.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's so many boxes to check. I remember moving from Vermont 7 years ago and I had to take like 10 tests to like get my license to teach here. So
yeah, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I got licensed for high school, middle school, and elementary school because I was like wide open. I never knew where I was gonna land. An opportunity came to go to Sumner Avenue and I took it and I'm glad I did.
With your background in science, did you have to, in the geology, right? I don't want to mess.
Yeah. Yep.
Did you use a lot of technology or was there certain pieces of technology that you used?
I did. Yeah. I used a lot of different types of some light programming. Oftentimes we had to, like for geophysics, we'd have to program the actual devices and the sensors to read appropriately. Any kind of mapping software. And, when you're writing the code to something, you have to troubleshoot it a lot. So I was pretty comfortable with computers and technology in that way. And, presentation wise and creating reports and mapping and graphs and, for clients. So I was comfortable with that. The learning curve for me came when I started teaching was how does this interface with like the teaching type of tools and software that is available, classroom management software, that kind of data management. It's a different type of thing, but it's in the same ballpark. So I was comfortable in that way, thankfully, because I had a lot of other things I had to learn. And that was one thing that I didn't have to.
So with only being in this district and teaching for the last couple of years, you had the opportunity to use a lot of technology because I know that 3 years ago, I think STEM Scopes was brand new and working elementary. Is that one of the big tools that you guys use in general?
I've used STEM Scopes quite a bit. Having an entire school, like 500 kids, thereabouts that you're teaching. Originally, when I first came in, I wanted them doing most of the work on paper, and I still have them do a lot of work on paper when we're in the classroom. But I found that if I could convert some of that to digital input, then it made everybody's life easier and the students as well, as long as they knew how to use it. So yeah, STEM scopes. And then I've had, I started with Brightspace and then moved to PowerTeacher that we have now, UC, and then now Schoology. So I've used three different platforms so far. So yeah, it's been a perpetual adaptation and learning a new program as often as I could.
Yeah, and I know the switch from UC to Schoology in particular. I mean, you didn't have, with only 1 year of Brightspace, you missed out on all the fun times that we had prior to, where UC was like a safe haven. And then for K to five, like Schoology was really, I think, is more friendly. I don't know. How do you feel about Schoology overall?
I like it. I listen to the teachers when I, that I work with and kind of hear their feedback. Like, I wish a program could do this. I wish a program could do that. And then when we got Schoology, I just thought in my mind, like, this is the program that everyone's been waiting for. It integrates with everything. It looks and acts like a social media page. Mm-hmm. So it's like a lot more intuitive for the students. Yeah. And you can you could integrate a lot of things with UC as well, but being able to integrate other programs and other platforms directly into Schoology and have it operate natively, like within the program, without having to open other windows or log in other places, is really invaluable. So I like the look of it. I like the feel of it. And I'm really happy with that one. I hope we keep it a little longer.
So, and I can assure you that we are, because UC is transitioning to Schoology because they purchased it last year. Okay. And so that's why we made the jump with K to five, because we felt that it was better for the students.
Yep.
It was going to be a little rough on teachers, but we felt that it was intuitive enough, and there's a lot of great materials to learn how to use the tool already put together, that hopefully it wasn't as big of a lift and as challenging as it was to go from Brightspace to UC. So
yeah, I thought it was pretty, there's always like little hiccups. You got to learn how the gray book interacts with other things, those little speed bumps. But beyond that, like, I was really happy with it. I found it pretty straightforward, and it did. If I asked it to do something, it seems to respond how I expect, which is nice.
Yes, it's always nice when we get what we want want to happen. Right. So take me back to March, April time with your school, and because you're over at Sumner, and Sumner is one of the larger elementary schools in the district. So what kind of things were going on, like on the leadership level and on the teacher level, that you're aware of or that you took part in to kind of help prepare students for learning when we had to stop on a dime, essentially, to start remote learning?
That was, I think, really challenging. That was an all-out scramble just to try to figure out what the students could do and what they'd be engaged with. And the way the schedule worked, I was basically available on Teams for the students, whenever they needed help. And so I'd field calls here and there all day about assignments that I would, or activities or tasks that I would upload for them to use. And basically you were thinking about how you could keep the student engaged, how they'd have something that they could actually do independently, even though like we were available to assist and help whenever they needed, not everybody was always checking in. So you just wanted everybody to be able to, to get something out of it, right, in the midst of this. And fast forward to now, it's a lot more structured. And, it's a learning curve every time you change anything up. And the beginning of the year, there were some growing pains at the beginning because everyone's trying to figure out how this platform works, how I can upload things, what happened. Oh, I uploaded this PDF and it's not working the way I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we're getting, you know, we're in December now, these things are getting like ironed out, and things are becoming more efficient, which is nice. A lot more structure to the lessons, a lot more support is available now, a lot more interactive lessons using other tools that where the students, I had attempted to use some of those last year and interactive tools, like something like Pear Deck, but there were some login issues, some single sign-on issues, even, and had, I don't know what it had to do with. It had something to do with Pear Deck's relationship with PowerPoint, you know, and its relationship with Microsoft. So there was kind of, there were some bumps there, but those seem to be getting ironed out.
You've mentioned a couple of things now about things that you were trying to do back in last school year. What were some of the things that were pretty successful in last school year that you were able to apply to this school year?
Well, there were good things about Pear Deck that I thought were, that I really liked, and the students really liked it. They liked interacting with the teacher and interacting with the lesson, where sometimes when, I don't know, just note, I've noticed that when you're on like a webinar as an adult and you're getting talked at, you're just kind of being presented things, and it's not, you know, you don't have any ownership in the conversation. You know, mm-hmm. you're absorbing. Maybe you ask questions at the end, and that's it, you know. Whereas when I use something like Pear Deck, I'm presenting something, but then the student is actually using their device to interact with the presentation itself, mm-hmm. and it's in a way kind of giving them ownership. So, you know, it's kind of, it's not ideal, right? In science, we like to have hands-on learning, you know, where they're actually doing the experiments themselves. Mm-hmm. But when they were able to, you know, engage directly with the device and with the lesson, they liked it. They, you know, and I got a lot of like, that was fun. You know, students would tell me, that was fun, Mr. Bevan, you know, and that's great, you know, because especially when you're like, wow, this is not an ideal situation, mm-hmm. and you had fun. So that's good, you know, so that means you got, you know, you were engaged at least. So, and just taking those tools and finding new ways to do that now, like I've been using a lot of Nearpod now. I've been using a lot of ClassKick, the Microsoft whiteboard that's inherent right in our device is an excellent whiteboard to create a document right on the fly. And just using Zoom. Last year we used Teams, and Teams is good for a lot of things. I like Teams. But Zoom is, I think, at this point right now, I like Zoom better for its ability to bring for presentation purposes. Mm-hmm. I'm able to use my iPhone as a document camera, and I can log into the meeting with my iPhone. And I can go outside and show the students something in my yard. Like I had a rotting squash, and we were talking about composting, right? And I could go right over to my compost pile and show them what's going on, like directly with my phone while my, you know, in a meeting. Mm-hmm. That was nice.
Yeah, so, I can see how that one could be nice, especially in thinking about doing it in the classroom and having to have rotting food in the classroom. not the most ideal.
No, the kids actually have a composting, Mrs. Olson in our school has a composting project going on with the fifth graders right now, where they have awesome. A giant freezer bag full of rotting food, basically they're watching it become moldy over time. So that's at their houses. I think that'll stay as long as their parents tolerate it, right? Then,
wow. So it sounds like you definitely tried a lot of things. I'm really interested in how you were using your camera as a document camera, because I know in our classrooms, we have those big hulking cameras, and I imagine you probably didn't bring that home with you, but being able to use your phone to walk around, that's a great idea.
Yeah. So the iPhone, I have a, like a flexible iPhone, like clamp basically, mm-hmm. that I have mounted to my desk, and I can clip my phone into it. And I have an iPhone that has the two lenses where it can kind of correct for the distance, mm-hmm. in autofocus. So I can use this as a document camera and spotlight it right in Zoom. And so I have two cameras connected at the same time. I also have a small microscope that I can click in. And when you go to Zoom, you can share a second camera and select the camera that you want to share as your second camera. And that that can be the input from the microscope. So, and you can use like the camera app if you want to adjust the lighting, and mm-hmm. you share from Zoom the camera app output. Yeah, just like a lot of, just throwing a lot of things at, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't, and a lot of things don't work. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's okay. You know,
keep moving. Yeah, absolutely. And so in thinking about, again, back to March, you gave a lot of great examples of things that you're doing. Is there anything that you did and you're like, I'm never doing that again type?
Oh, man. Yeah, there are. And it has to do mostly with like, and I got to think of some specific examples, but jumping right in with the younger grades and overestimating some students' comfort and some families' comfort, especially with the younger kids. And not that I was trying to ask them to do anything extreme, but when you have them join like two things or log in here, log in there, it become, you know, it's a real time sink. It's a time sink in the classroom, but it's a real time sink online. So I think that was my, in general, if I could point to like any big mistake I made, is just overestimating the young kids, right? Their abilities, right? They're getting better at it now, but they need a lot of time and to get used to the technology and used to the tool to use it effectively.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Cause it's one thing doing it in the classroom where you can just bounce around to each student or have a card with a QR code on it that they just hold up and scan to get them into where they need to go. But now you're trying to do that remotely with 20 or 30 students.
Yeah.
I can see that being very much of, not just like a time suck, but like also a frustration level riser.
For the students, especially, yeah. You know, yeah. Cause they just want to get, they just want to do this, you know, and you've thrown, instead of like helping them, you've thrown like a major impediment up to their, and they, you know, that's not good. Also, I guess using, I like the single sign-on with Microsoft mm-hmm. and that's excellent and it saves a lot of time, but we've had some students, even though they do have a school computer. Sometimes they're at their aunt's house or they're at a program or something's happened. And so they're on their, you know, they're on dad's tablet that day. And, you know, that's not a Microsoft device. Mm-hmm. So using things that are 100% single sign-on through Microsoft can throw a roadblock up to some students in some situations.
Yeah, especially because they'd have to log in again and again and again as they bounce from place to place.
Right. Or like where even is this application that is, you know, housed somewhere on the Springfield server, you know, that you have to get them the link specifically, you know, to the student application where they log in. So that's one reason why, even though like Nearpod or Pear Deck was like really nice for single sign-on and it kind of threw up a couple roadblocks early on. Nearpod, it has that flexibility where you can either set it for single sign-on, which is nice, or you can set it for just anyone with a link can join and they can write their name manually. So I've been using Nearpod just because I've had that flexibility of doing single sign-on. And then if I look and I see I have like three students today that don't have a Microsoft device and it's, you know, an issue for them, I can generate a new code for the lesson without a Microsoft single sign-on tag. So mm-hmm. it'll just be a regular join, type your name, and you're in the line. So
I know I personally love Nearpod, and I wish we were able to get it for the entire district, but especially because Nearpod has the embeddable feature into Schoology itself.
Yeah.
So you can embed the Nearpod lesson right in there. So all I have to do is click on the folder and go.
Yeah, it's huge because if you can embed it directly into Schoology, which is sweet, right? But then in Nearpod, you can also directly embed Flipgrid mm-hmm. directly into Nearpod. And then you also can embed FET simulations, which are from the University of Colorado, which are awesome for physics with the fourth and fifth graders. Those are embeddable in Nearpod as well. And so you end up, through Schoology, you end up being able to integrate Nearpod, VR field trips, FET, and Flipgrid all through one program, like kind of piggybacking on one another.
Yeah. And that's not even counting like the questions and the types of questions that you can put into the Nearpod itself too. So those checks for understandings along the way.
Right. Yeah. Those are invaluable.
I know that I don't want to keep you all time. What is one thing that has happened this fall that you were super excited about, or that one experience that you had with your students where you're like, yes, this is awesome?
I would say the one experience I had where I thought it was awesome. The other day we did a little experiment where the kids were making little mountains and making it rain on top of the mountains. And everyone was just laughing. The kids were all laughing because they were getting to make like a little mess on a plate. And they were also interacting a little bit with like a Nearpod presentation I had. And then like mystery science. And it was like the closest I came to like really having, I've had it a couple times, but that's probably the closest I come to like having like a real science class experience, you know, where the kids were actually like, you could hear them laughing and having fun, like just like we would in the classroom. Mm-hmm. So that'd probably be it. Anytime I can hear a kid like laugh or have a good time or forget themselves a little bit in this weird situation, that's what I like.
Yeah. So my final question for today, one of the things that I've read a lot about recently, and it's in the digital learning playbook, is about self-care and taking care of yourself as a human being, not just you're now a teacher who is in crisis management for your students. So what are some things that you've done for yourself that help you just be okay during this time?
I've been focusing a lot on like making sure I try to get enough sleep. And I've changed my sleep schedule quite a bit, which is my wife would agree with me or not, but you know, I'll get up really early in the morning, like say 4 o'clock in the morning, and you know, make coffee and just have like a little bit of quiet time and any kind of like planning I need to do. I get it done before school, and a little bit of reading time in the morning. It's quiet. It's just for, you know, it's just for me. And then 3:30, 4 o'clock comes along, and I try to really disconnect and focus on like my family. My son is distance learning as well right now. So try to check in with him, check in with my wife, see how everything's going, you know, on the family home front, and just focus on family until, you know, bed, wake up, and then have like another day. So by segmenting the time that I'm spending on certain things and then focusing on those, that's the big thing for me.
That's awesome. I don't know if I agree with the 4 a.m. part, but
no, my wife doesn't either. My wife's like, this is not good. Like, what are you doing? But I kind of like it. I don't know.
But I like that you do. It seems like when your school day is done, you kind of just shut off. I love that. Like, I know for me, I have to walk away and I can't, like, I've started to take apps off my phone personally for like Outlook and Teams. And I just, the weekends I've started to put up messages saying I'm just not available.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I had to kind of do that a little bit at the beginning of distance learning last spring, where I was getting messages and calls of kids that, like, you know, it must be like, you know, when they have a chance, they're working on their assignment now, and it's 9:30, 9 o'clock at night, you know? And I didn't think it would be right for me to be like conversing, you know, 9 o'clock at night with another student. And, you know, but at the same time, like, you know, I wanted to help them. So I was really conflicted about that. So I had to put a message out myself on the Instagram, like, I am available 100% of the time between these hours. Like, you contact me here and I'm there, you know. But after that, like, you know, after 5 o'clock, you know, I'm away. I'm resting, and I hope you are too, you know.
Yeah. Well, Liam, thank you for this time. It's been great. It's great to hear everything that's going on from what you guys are doing over at Sumner and what you're doing in your science classrooms. So thank you.
All right. Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you again, Liam, for joining us for this episode of the podcast. I really love a lot of the things that you're doing. I think it's fantastic that not only did you get a microscope and you figured out how to use your iPhone as a document camera, those things are awesome. And it really brings us back into the way that we were teaching in person when you had those materials at your disposal. And so it was really cool to see how you're using that. It was also great to hear how the kind of litany of things that you tried and then you weren't afraid to try things. And that's one of the things that we always preach from DLA here is don't be afraid to try tools. Go to the trainings, learn about how to use them, think about the way that you are teaching and if it applies to you and the way that you are trying to deliver the content for your class, then great. If not, maybe we'll find something else along the way. There's a lot of great things that you can do, and we are very excited to share them with you. If you want to learn more about all the tools that Liam is using in the classroom or that he tried and didn't quite work for him, check out the description below. There should be links to all of those tools listed there. Thank you again for spending some time with me and Liam and just hearing about all the great things that are happening in Springfield Public Schools. If you love this episode of the SPS Digital Learning Hour, please head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you happen to listen to us. Make sure that you leave us a review, give us a rating, subscribe. 5 stars would be much appreciated. It helps us reach a broader audience. We know not every teacher is out there listening to us, but if you give us those reviews, it helps us move up the boards so that we can be found a lot easier. If you know of someone who'd be great to interview, or if you're doing something that's pretty awesome in the classroom and you want to be able to share, please don't be afraid to reach out to us. You can reach out directly to me in my email at ThomasMI, or you can submit us a post out on Yammer or social media, wherever you happen to post. And again, you'll be able to find this episode along with all the rest of them out on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for listening today. I'm your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SPS Digital Learning Hour. All content is produced, edited, audio mixed, graphic design, all by Mike Thomas from DLA at Springfield Public Schools. Music is performed by Risen. You can find them out on SoundCloud. The song is called Tell Me. It's instrumental and is available for free download and streaming on all your favorite streaming devices. Check out our show notes for more details.